Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to another episode of Rogue Startups. Sorry for the bit of a hiatus that we've been on, but there's just been a lot going on in the world lately, and Dave and I thought it was kind of appropriate to take a bit of time off from the podcast. But this week I'm back with a good friend, Moritz Dausinger, and we're going to be kind of talking through his journey as a founder, both with some early successes and then some things he's learned here in the last year or so with his new venture. So Moritz, how's it going?
Hey, Greg. Thanks a lot for inviting me to Rogue Startup. Thrilled to be here.
My pleasure. Yeah, yeah. So we've known each other for, golly, 3 or 4 years, I guess. We met at SaaStock in Dublin a few years ago and have been kind of chatting pretty regularly since then. But yeah, I thought it'd be fun to kind of chat through a bit of your story. Yeah, like I said, kind of some things that you did before and having two pretty successful exits and then kind of what you're up to now with Refiner. But for folks who kind of don't know you and kind of what you're up to, you want to give kind of a bit of a backstory on yourself?
Yeah, sure. And yeah, I think you're right. It's like 3 years ago. I have this T-shirt of SaaStock 2007, which I'm still wearing from time to time.
Wow.
So I think most people who know me because I had two more or less well-known SaaS products, which I was growing over the last couple of years. The first one, which is called MailParser, and the second one is basically the sister application of that, which is called DocParser. MailParser, I started in 2015, or let's say it like this, 2015, I went full-time on it. The project actually started in 2014. MailParser is a data processing app, basically an API product used by tech-savvy people, not just developers, but developers and tech-savvy people who are using also things like Zapier and all kind of workflow automation tools. And so MailParser started as a side project while I was still working full-time. And to be honest, I was not having a lot of ambitious goals for it, but it turned out to become a really nice success. So after a couple of months, I decided to go full-time on it. That was 2015. After that, 2 years later, I launched DocParser. And I grew both apps to a point where I was able to sell them in 2000. Like it was the whole selling process was a little bit long, but let's say it was 2018. Yeah. And then since then, I did a little break and I'm working on a new venture right now, which is called Refiner.
And with the with DocParser and MailParser, you mentioned that they were kind of like successful exits. Looking back now, what is your, like, in retrospect, what is your kind of perception of kind of deciding to sell those and what it meant for kind of your future and your ability to kind of do different things and maybe different things that you wanted to do, like, outside of those spaces? Because it's been a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. So basically, when I went full time on MailParser, that was the time when I also realized that this is the thing I build has value. There's a market for it. It's an upcoming market, actually. And seems like it was really, I was positioned pretty well in this market because it was usually a market reserved to bigger enterprise customers and solutions which were catering to those folks. And I came into the market with a solution which was for small and medium-sized businesses who also then, as I mentioned before, are using solutions like Zapier to automate their workflow. So I was in a position where I had a software well-positioned in the market where people were willing to pay. And I wasn't the only one, but I was definitely a little bit ahead of the curve with both of those products. And so when I realized that, I definitely also asked myself, where should this journey go and how big of a company I want to create? And it's not that I can manage to do it, but for just to set a goal for myself. And pretty quickly, I actually thought, you know, like given my personal circumstances with having young kids and wanting to buy an apartment and all this kind of stuff, I thought, well, the way I would define success for me, for Maypars and Dogpars, is basically to be able to sell them one day so that I can secure my entrepreneur journey going forward. And this is exactly what happened. So I'm building a refiner, and I'm still basically doing the stuff I did before, building software products from scratch. But it's definitely this first exit allowed me to approach building refiner in a different way. It's like just a little bit more means behind it, a little bit more power behind it. You can do more stuff and you don't need to work nights and weekends and all this kind of stuff. So I feel like I'm still working in the same way than before, but definitely those two exits changed the way I can approach all this right now.
That, I mean, that's like an extension of a lot of the freedom that a lot of us are going for, I think, is like we start all of this because we think that, you know, being an entrepreneur and all this will give us more freedom versus an independence and like control over our destiny than having a day job. And I think we get to that point. And then like, it sounds like selling locked that in for you for like the longer term. Is that kind of how you were thinking about it?
Yeah, exactly. It was basically taking chips off the table. Like, okay, for this kind of software, I could definitely continue maintaining and growing this the software. And it's, to be honest, not what gets me really excited. So I'm more like a product guy. I love building new stuff like everybody else. But anyhow, like I think I was able to build a lot of value in the beginning because I'm a developer myself. But I'm not necessarily a really, really good company builder in the sense of managing people, hiring a big team and doing all the building those pyramids of the hierarchies and so on. So I was more or less, maybe it was, I think it was pretty naive, to be honest, but I was convinced that I can do it again and I can recreate again a lot of value within 2 or 3 years by building a software, bringing it to the market, bringing it to product market fits, and then getting it started to a point where I would say, okay, now my job as a software, early stage software engineer is done. Now somebody else could take it over. So that was the idea, basically, for me to say my strong suit is launching, going to initial product market fit. My strong suit is, however, not continuing to grow a software for 10 years and building a huge team around it.
And I mean, I think that's a good segue into kind of the things you've learned since kind of selling, and I want to get into kind of where Refiner is and what the path there has been like. But I think before that, it's like a big question on a lot of people's mind, and like mine even. Like I project forward and think about, you know, if I sold Castos one day, what would I do then? You know, I think that's like part of the deterrent for me of even thinking about selling right now is I have no idea what I would do with my time or focus and money, you know, maybe even like, what was that like decision-making process for you? Like to say like, okay, I went from, you know, this thing that you mentioned, like you liked the business, but maybe not like the place you operated in, and like, you know, email and document parsing and PDFs is not like super exciting. Like it's not the next Twitter, but like, how did you think about, okay, now I can do anything I want. I'm going to go attack this problem in this space.
Well, to be completely honest, like when I went out of the last adventure, which I need to correct you there, I actually like the email parsing, document parsing space.
Okay,
It's very techy. It's interesting in a certain way. But yeah, definitely it was not something which I see myself as a life mission for the next coming 30 years. Yeah. But anyway, so when I ended this adventure with Dog Parser, I was basically pretty confident that I figured it all out. I know how to build SaaS. I know how to go to market. I basically just need to do it again and again and again. I thought I found my model, and my model is being a company builder in the early stages and just doing it over and over again, because this is what I actually enjoy doing, like creating products, finding the first customers and so on. And as we chat from time to time, you know the story a little bit, but things came different. Let's say like this. I was transitioning out of DocParser. So the deal was with the buyer that I will continue operating the software for a certain amount of time until a milestone is reached. And then I can. So in the end, I was basically working just a couple of hours per week on DocParser, but I was not working there full time anymore. And so I was also not in the mood of saying, okay, I'm making a full break, because I still was working a couple of hours per week for DocParser. So I thought, well, the best thing I can do is just build a new software. And yeah, so I started building Refiner, and Refiner started as a simple idea, and it became over time bigger and bigger and more complex, and I changed directions. And all this, I think, happened just because I actually didn't find some initial attraction and some first paying customers. So instead of asking myself hard questions, I just continued developing software. And this is, I mean, this is a beginner's mistake. This is, I mean, but anyway, it happened. So
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I lost your track of your question. I'm not sure if I'm answering.
No. So I mean, I think that's a good. Like, I had a clarification about that. Is like you said, it started out as something simple and turned into something very complex. And you have been doing this long enough to know that, like, just building more features and all this without knowing like exactly what your customers need and what other things are in the market is like what we should be doing. But I think that's really hard sometimes. And I know, like, cause we talk kind of regularly that you do too. And that, like, at a point, the whole like customer development model is wrong, I think. Right. Cause like you can't customer develop without something these days. And if you customer develop too long, then you've spent 6 or 12 months building something that people don't want. And like, what did you, like, looking back now, what did you learn about kind of how you managed that balance of like build, because you have to have something to show people, or do customer development to figure out what they really want and then go build it? Because I think you can't do both like full on. It's a compromise.
It's really funny because, you know, like, I was talking with a couple of young entrepreneurs who were asking me for advice, and I basically was preaching all the time, like, okay, if you don't have something with an initial traction, don't just add more features. It will not help. You need to iterate, maybe change the angle a little bit, sell it differently, and so on and so on, until you have something. And if you have something, you can then definitely add more features and make it more powerful. So this is, I think, the point where I got lost a little bit, that instead of having something if people want it, I just were trying to compensate that by adding more features on it. And so today I really try to internalize this every week, saying, okay, let's keep the product simple. We can make it bigger and bigger later on, when once there is traction. But until there's no traction, I can come up with any kind of feature ideas, like, and I can build them, but who tells me that they are actually needed? So I think this feedback loop with early customers is so essential. Basically, I think once you have 10 people using your app and they are fans and they like what you're doing, it feels like the hardest part is done. I mean, not the hardest part of the whole story, but one really, really difficult part is done, which is like you have something in your hands, and then you can build on based on customer feedback and so on.
For you, like that journey to, you know, like a critical mass of customers has been like harder than you thought. What do you think contributed to that?
I think let's give you some context first. Refiner is a user feedback and customer survey tool. And I started it as a user feedback and customer survey tool in the beginning because I needed that for my own while growing DocParser. So basically I was scratching my own itch. Yeah. So with DocParser, we had a incoming stream, like a pretty good stream of inbound leads every day. a lot of account creations, freemium, back then it was free trial users testing out the software. And within those free trial users were a couple of guys which we thought could become really big accounts. So we wanted to reach out to them in a, let's say, inside sales kind of way, just to make really sure that these guys, the big guys, are experiencing, are having a good experience, and that we are hand-holding them. So what I built for Doc Parser, what I built myself, was some kind of in-app survey, which would pop up after 5 minutes, asking two simple questions. And in the case of Doc Parser, it was, how many documents do you process per month, and what type of documents are you processing? And with the answer to those two simple questions, we are then able to identify good leads on our end, which we would want to call. And so basically, I was looking for this kind of in-app survey solution, which would allow me to do that. And I didn't really find what I was looking for, so I thought, I'm going to build that. So I was starting the project by being convinced that if I need that, a lot of different people should need that. And then I was, I don't know why, somehow getting away from this idea. And I added, because my use case was lead scoring in this case, you know, I'm asking questions to identify good leads. So I don't know why I actually stopped with this whole surveys and focused entirely on lead scoring. And then I spent several months, nearly 1 year, trying to build a lead scoring solution for SaaS, until the point that I did a full stop beginning of the year and saying, okay, somehow, I don't know how, I got derailed. And what I actually wanted to build is a custom survey solution. So let's go back there. That's what I actually also did in the beginning of the year. I did a full pivot, if you can call it a pivot, and went back to customer service. And since then, I'm working on customer service, and it's actually working good. But I actually have difficulties answering the question of why I got derailed. Like somehow I thought, it's not enough. I need to make it even bigger. And the value is somewhere else. The value is not in capturing data. The value is in crunching the data. But turned out that this was not correct. So I think I was maybe just a little bit too much in the mindset of, oh yeah, yeah, no, I know it. I figured it out. I built a couple of software businesses before. I should know.
Yeah.
It. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the kind of curse of success, or the curse of knowledge, is real. Like you've done it once before. Oh, I can just, you know, make this and talk to customers and give them what they want and all this kind of stuff. And I think, like, I saw this with Sales Camp, is like, the market is there, the need is validated, and like, for whatever reason, like, I just couldn't make it work. And I don't know why that is, but I think sometimes, like, you can get the right founder in the wrong place or something for like a problem. Because I mean, there are other tools doing what you were talking about with like lead scoring and lead qualification for kind of higher end SaaS. But I think part of it is like this product founder fit that people talk about, is like, that might not be what you want, or like, you can't relate to the people having that problem, maybe, or you don't want to operate in that space or something. I think sometimes that can be kind of why some of us have a hard time aligning that really well.
I totally agree with you there. So basically, my strong suit with what I think what worked pretty well for me in with MayParser and Doc Parser was offering a self-service SaaS, a pretty techie self-service SaaS. So we needed to do some hand holding in there, but it was still a self-service SaaS in a market where usually there were not many self-service solutions. And so I was, let's say, I'm more like this inbound marketing self-service guy, you know. And now with a Refiner, when I did lead scoring, I basically made it the solution more and more complex. So it became some kind of solution which you cannot sell in just in self-service, because there's actually probably not that much search going on Google, first of all, to create a massive amount of traffic. And secondly, it's just so complex. So and then this would mean I would need to do outreach, going to trying to find leads on my own, then trying to show them the value of the product, and then like doing the whole enterprisey sales dance. And there are people who can do that, and there are then people like me who don't like doing that or cannot do it. And so what you said with this, there's definitely product market fit, okay, but like this founder product fit, that's real. Like I mean, if you are building a, I don't know, but it goes many ways, you know. It goes in the way that maybe you can build you're building an enterprise software, but you're not made for selling enterprise software. But it can also go in a different way. Maybe you are an engineer who can build super complex, great stuff, but you want to sell it in a cool way, like Dropbox, and then people will just not take it. Like it's not authentic, you know? So I feel like with, for example, what I'm doing right now with Refiner today, this is also a very conscious choice that I want to serve to startups which have initial traction and are going to scale, but I don't want to sell to the scale-ups, and I don't want to sell to like a $9 per month plan. So I'm did a more or less conscious choice to say, okay, this is the segment of the market I feel comfortable in, where I can do marketing, where I can also do some kind of sales through customer support, but it's definitely not where I need to build presentations, reach out to somebody on LinkedIn, trying to identify who in this company is taking care of that and that topic. So, I think that's there's so many parameters, like, okay, product market fit, founder product fit, maybe also founder market fit, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, in theory, this is all so explainable, but when you're in there, I mean, you know, it always afterwards, but when you're in there, it's super tough to see those patterns.
Yeah. And I don't think that it's possible to see that in like entirely before you get started with a product, because like on the surface, you can say, okay, you know, this is a medium or low touch product like ours is at Castos. You know, we talk to some customers, we have a lot of customers that, you know, go to the website, sign up and pay and all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. But I don't think you can know that entirely upfront, because probably, like you said, what you ran into is that like Refiner started pretty simply and then moved pretty quickly to like an enterprise B2B. Like you have to get on the phone to talk to everybody to understand what they're trying to do and integrate into their CRM and all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of just the evolution of the product, like as you got closer to product market fit, probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's also like, I think maybe if I would have done my homework a little bit more throughout, I would have seen all that before really starting going full time on the product. But I'm working a little bit different, and I mean, that's just the way I'm working. Like for me, it's like I see some vague idea of an opportunity, and then basically I see my work in just going forward and trying to figure out what is it exactly, what's missing here and what needs to be done. And I do it because I'm having an engineering background by building products. Other people might do it by just doing hundreds of interviews. So I think everybody has his approach there, you know, like but it's definitely super important to be conscious about the fact that you can have hundreds of good ideas. It doesn't matter as long as there's not a real market need. And so
yeah,
this is usually defined by paying customers. So it's difficult to find this balance between being convinced that there's something to do and you have your long-term product vision, which you think is so good and so awesome. And then you have the reality of the market, when the market tells you, okay, no, actually nobody likes that or needs that.
Yeah.
But maybe they need that. And then, so it's very difficult to find a good balance between those two.
Mm. We talk a lot about like product led growth. And I know that's kind of the space that you're going in with Refiner at this point. like for folks maybe, who maybe haven't heard of product-led growth, what like what's your definition of that?
Yeah, to be honest, I think product-led growth is just more or less a new word for freemium or free trial, but it's so there's nothing really new about all this. It's just more or less a word which is giving us a framework on how to sell software. And so the idea there is that, let's say, back in the days, enterprise software or software for bigger companies was sold by through human contact, like you reach out to them, you have meetings, you do presentations, and you show all the value and so on and so on. And so the idea behind product-led growth is that you that the product is doing most of that. So basically, you're building products which are easy to adopt, even by bigger enterprise customers, but just more or less lurking them in into the product with freemium or free trials. And then you might say, okay, but freemium and free trial products are not for big enterprise customers, but that's really not true, as we see it with Slack or if also Dropbox. I mean, I think Slack is probably the incarnation of product-led growth. So they, I think, I don't know the really the numbers, but I think like they do 1/3 of their revenue with enterprise customers, which is not something you would expect if you see the software like that. But it's definitely, they somehow manage to build a software which is easy to adopt, but still then they manage to go into those direction Fortune 500 companies. So, and this is product-led growth for me, this combining like basically letting the product speak for itself as quick as possible, and this is mostly done with freemium or free trial offers.
And at this point with kind of Refiner, where in the like product market fit spectrum do you feel like you are?
That's a pretty good question. I feel like, I mean, what I see, what I can say, what I see is that it goes to the right and to the up. So it's going slowly, but it's more every week. And also what is completely different than compared to 2019, I have people writing me, I have support tickets, I am in interacting with customers, they ask me for that, and sometimes the questions are really good, sometimes I feel like, oh, they didn't actually understand what the product is about. So I feel like I have something going, you know, like this is so different to what I felt like in 2019, where it's basically you build something and there's just silence. And now I'm building something, I write a newsletter about it, people are coming back to me. And then, so I think now it's like there's a lot of work to be done still, but the machine is, or the train is rolling somehow.
Yeah.
And for example, to give you a concrete example about Refiner. So Refiner started for me as a survey tool, which would allow you to ask 2 or 3 simple questions to then qualify leads. Okay, but this is just one use case. But the much bigger use case is actually doing just really standard research, like user research, like asking questions like, how did you hear about our solution? Or what kind of feature would you need most? On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you recommend our product? And so on. So there's so many use cases around in-app surveys. And I was starting with this one, and now I just discovered this whole, I don't know, this whole topic of customer research and user research. And so I'm basically positioning Refiner today as a user feedback and customer survey tool. Like there are hundreds on the market. And this is for me a good sign. There's a well-defined category. These products exist since years and years. However, I'm doing that exactly and specialized for SaaS businesses, because I think SaaS businesses have a unique setup, and it's different than an e-commerce store, and it's different than a realtor website. So surveys, pop-up surveys, which were built maybe for websites, anonymous traffic, they might appear like the service I'm offering with Refiner, but it's a completely different approach, because for me, with Refiner, you are launching those surveys inside your product, inside your SaaS product. And so it means you can tie those responses to the user.
Yeah.
And you can say, this user answered like that, so I want to send him a follow-up email. Or mm-hmm. I want to segment my users and saying, I'm just looking at the responses of my best users, the ones on the higher tier plan. Or, you know, like it opens up so many new things. And all this I discovered during the last, say, 3 months. And so, yeah, I'm feeling really confident about I'm learning a lot from the market, and I'm not just making it up. I'm just learning it from people. Mm-hmm. So that's really good. And I feel like what started a little bit esoteric becomes more and more very like, oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's customer research. This is a topic which exists since years and years, and mm-hmm. I just need to attack it from a different angle.
Yeah.
So, well, it's not that I'm having a software in hyper growth in front of me, but it's definitely, as I said before, a train which started rolling. So that's good.
I like this trend, and maybe it's just a trend because I'm just kind of realizing it, but there is this space in like the data we get that is really specific to a user level and like a specific user and at scale. You know, you think about things like Stripe or ProfitWell or Google Analytics. They're like big cohort level things. And it's tough to say like, yeah, like you're talking about like this user or the users on my highest tier plan answered this survey about where they found us in this way. And that's different than our free users or our customers that churn a lot. And then like that lets you inform a lot of your marketing and customer acquisition decisions. We are just starting to do some of this now. And it's actually kind of hard to do with a lot of the tools that are out there. We're using a cool one of the TinySeed Group 2 batches called Segmetrics. Segmetrics.io does this for like attribution, which we talked about on the show. And I know we've talked about, Maurizio and I, like one-on-one, that they do like, they kind of connect AdWords and Stripe together. Essentially that's just another example of like you can run those kind of level of granularity reports and say like for these best users what characteristics they have, and for my customers that are having the highest amount of problems like the churn or whatever, what kind of problems are they having or where did they come from or whatever. And I think that seems to be a trend for me, or at least something that we're kind of learning these days, and that's really impactful when you can get that data at a scale where you can say, this is not just one person I heard from, you know, because like that vocal minority is really dangerous. I think if you listen to that vocal minority, they take you in a direction that's not like healthy for the business. But if you can get dozens or hundreds of people saying the same thing in a group, that's magic.
Yeah, I think that you're totally right. I mean, for sure there are different levels of feedback. You have like small amounts of feedback from 5 users can be super valuable if it's qualitative, if they write you in their own words what they think. And then there's, however, I think what is really dangerous is this averaging data. So just looking at all your users, asking all your users the same question, and then say, well, on average, they answered like that.
Yeah.
What you really, really want to do is segment those users. Like, and this you can just do by attaching those data points you have to your user account. And then you can do really magic stuff like saying, okay, well, actually, I want to bring my software a little bit upmarket. So let's just look at my higher tier users. What do they value? What do where did they find me? And so I feel like this is where the real power comes in, if you're able to segment your user base. And I mean, there are great tools like user analytics who look at the activity in your app. For example, you could say, well, people on my higher tier plan are using these kind of features. Like, you can measure that. That's great. And what Refiner does is basically, it would allow you in this case to tell you, well, people on my higher tier plan are valuing this and this, and they are thinking this and that. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I'm definitely want to position Refiner in the analytics space. It's a survey tool. It's something that helps you capture insights from your customers, but it's not on average overall. It allows you to really segment, and it's not just the usage, because, and you can really actually ask any kind of question. And this is where I'm think it can be really powerful to do some kind of ad hoc campaigns, saying, okay, wait, before we start building this feature, let's just do a survey, run a survey on our users if they actually would like to have that feature or not.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
But it can also be implemented in a way that it's like an always on thing. For example, what a lot of our users do right now are in-app NPS surveys. So those things where they ask you, how likely would you recommend our solution to a friend from 0 to 10?
Mm-hmm.
If the user answers 9 or 10, then they would automatically receive an email saying, hey, thanks, that's so good that you are liking our product. Could you maybe write a review on this and this website? Or could you maybe, do you have maybe a friend who could also benefit from our app? So basically, this is some kind of always on survey, which becomes part of your growth machine. So it's basically just every day sending out 2 or 3 emails to your biggest fans, asking them if they can help you in some way with the growth. And the other way around, for example, if they answer, they don't like your app, then you could ask follow-up questions automatically with a multiple choice saying, okay, why is it, where can we do better?
Yeah.
Are you maybe not satisfied with the customer service? Don't you like the pricing? And so on and so on. So I think there are just so many use cases, and I'm actually having a call today with a friend who could hopefully help me writing down all those, what I call playbooks for in-app surveys. So coming back to your initial question about the product market fit, I think there's so much still to learn, but that I see so many different playbooks and ways how you can use those in-app surveys, so that I'm pretty excited about the next months.
Awesome. Very cool. Moritz, it was great to catch up and kind of hear a little more of the kind of the journey of, you know, building and selling and starting again and kind of where you are now with Refiner. Thanks for sharing the story. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I think, you know, like if there's one takeaway from all this, it's like I built many, many software products before, some of them successful, some not. And it's just every time again and again, challenging, but this is also what's good about it. This is what mm-hmm. I like about it. So if I can share my learnings with your listeners, that's always a pleasure. And so thanks a lot for having me here.
Awesome. My pleasure. And refiner.io for folks that want to chat with Moritz about kind of in-app surveys and product feedback tools that he's building there. And Moritz on Twitter, you are...
MDausinger.
Awesome.
And yeah, but refiner.io or Twitter, that's the place.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks, Moritz. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.